Hi, y'all. I'm Mike Erickson. I'm an alcoholic. All right, buddy. July 19th, 87 is my sobriety date, and I'm just tickled pink to be here with y'all tonight. And I want to thank Katie for a great 10-minute talk. Yeah, we're here. I got sober in Austin. There are good things that come out of Austin. Yeah. And I understand what it's like to sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous dying. I understand what it's like to do that, and I'll talk about that a little bit tonight. I want to thank you guys for inviting me to come talk. I'm amazed. I'm always amazed that someone invites me to do something for Alcoholics Anonymous, because if you went to bed with my head and woke up with my head, you wouldn't invite me anywhere. I've been doing this for 19 years. I go to bed thinking about me. I wake up thinking about me. Pretty much all the time. So I'm absolutely amazed that you guys would give me this privilege to sit here and share my story with you. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. My life is really different from the way it was when I got here, and God plays tricks on me. I like having a sense of humor. I like having some fun, and God knows that. I really do believe He knows that. I'm on the airplane. For some reason, I get routed strange routes lately. I had to go through St. Louis to get here yesterday. And so I'm on the plane, and this guy sits down next to me, and he's moving fast. You guys, some of you might know what it's like to move faster than is biologically supposed to happen. And this guy, I watch him. I'm an observant guy, and I watch this guy. He goes into the bathroom, and he comes out, and there's some physical differences in the way he's acting. He's doing this a lot. And he's swallowing deeply, and he's licking his lips, and his jaws are going like this. And I have a point of reference for behavior like that. So, and he wants to have a conversation, and and a lot of it. A lot of conversation, and he starts telling me that he's the guitar manager for a band called REO Speedwagon, and I happen to have worked with a girl that dated the guitar player of REO Speedwagon, and I made the mistake of letting him know that, and that led to more conversation, and he kept going, and then he started talking about his buddies, the rock stars, who have a terrible time getting sober. And how he's partied with this celebrity and that celebrity, and how terrible it is and how tragic it is, as he's doing, I partied with Joe, and he's ripped all the time. And so I'm listening to this deal go on, and I'm thinking, this is really interesting. What's going to come out of this one? And so he goes, man, I wish I could get sober. And then he turns to me. His next question is, so what are you doing on this plane? Well, I happen to be going to Las Vegas to talk at an AA meeting. Ooh, that'll put an ender on a cocaine buzz real fast. But, I think it's amazing that when I'm willing to participate in life, this is what gets thrown at me. You know what? I walked away with that with a couple of things. I remembered what it's like to sit on his side of the coin and to not know a way out. I remembered that. I felt that, I felt the feeling of, God, I want to change so bad and I don't know how to do it. I felt the feeling of, I've gone to your meetings and you don't have anything for me. I've tried everything, and it's not going to work for me. I mean, I've felt that. And then I also remembered what a rotten thing it is to talk to a loaded person. They don't have a lot of social skills. You know that? And I can remember myself trying to talk to people loaded. You can't remember their name. You can't remember the last sentence out. And it was like, oh, man, you know what? And I treated people. I just run through people's lives like that, and it just brought all that stuff right back up to the surface. Guy, I'm so glad that I have a sponsor today that is stronger than my head, that encourages me to go where the wet drunks are so I can remember what I am. And what I am is an alcoholic. I didn't know that when I got here. I didn't know what was wrong with me. We went to the detox this morning, and you know, I can recall prior to getting sober, walking past mirrors and looking at myself going, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Having no idea what was wrong with me. I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was. I knew that you were a problem. I can always put my finger on you as a problem, but I could not figure out what was going on. I had no idea when I went to my first AA meeting. I had no idea that I had no idea what was wrong with me. I'll tell you, I went to my first AA meeting and I went around the room and they said, my name's Bill and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm thinking, oh, geez, Bill, you just said that in public. I can't believe that. And then the next guy, I'm Ted and I'm an alcoholic. I'm like, oh, Ted, they got you too. You know, and then Sally says, my name's Sally, I'm an alcoholic. I'm like, oh, geez, even the women, come on. You know, and I'm going around the room and I got to fit in. It kills me not to fit in. So it gets to me and I say, I'm Mike, I'm an alcoholic. And I don't have any idea what I'm telling you when I say that. I didn't have any idea. I didn't know what it meant. All I knew is I had lots of strange things that came to pass in my life, and I sensed that they had something to do with drinking. And they had something to do with my use of pharmaceutical accelerants. You know, I sensed that that was the problem, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I didn't know what was wrong with me. And, you know, I'll tell you, our book says to share in a general way what I used to be like, what happened to me through the process of Alcoholics Anonymous and what I am like today. And, you know, I sit in a meeting like this. I sit in probably hundreds of these meetings a year, and I hear alcoholics say, every real alcoholic I hear from behind the podium says something like, something very similar to this statement. I don't ever feel like I fit in. When I was born, I've never felt like I fit in a group. I never felt like I was a part of. I was born Catholic in Salt Lake City, Utah. Man, I know where you're coming from, brother. I know where you're coming from. And that kind of sets the tone for me. I think one of the best ways to describe me is I am a 50-yard runner in a 100-yard race. I tell you what, come race day, I dress in the best spandex shorties I got. And I buy the best gear you can get. And I get in the blocks and I size up my competition. And I look at them and think, I got you. And I got you. You might be a problem, but I can take you out. You are a loser. I got you easy. And I size up my competition. And then the starting gun goes off, and I take out of the blocks as fast as I can. And the first guy passes me, and I go, screw running. You know what? I never liked running. You might as well drive. You get there a lot faster. And I quit. I'm a quitter. That's what I do. I do that very well. I can remember remember the fear of not winning and not being the best at my game. I can recall that fear well before I ever took a drink of alcohol. I can remember being on a diving team when I was a kid, and it came the day to do the 1.5 front flip. And I just got up out of the pool and went home. Okay? Well, there's a winner's story. But that's what drives me. Fear dominates me. Fear dominated me. And I love what our 12 and 12 says, that we are guys that like to struggle to the top of the heap or hide underneath it. I don't ever find a ground of just being useful. I either want to be on top or I want to be the worst of the worst. I don't have any middle ground in my life. I mean, I'm a kind of run to extremes. And you know, you pour a little alcohol on that, and you know what alcohol does for me? Is it stills the screaming madness that goes on inside of my head. It lets everything restful and quiet for a little while. You know that? And I know today in my heart of hearts that if I were to take a drink of alcohol, it would do the very same thing it did for me 19 years ago. It would still the madness that goes on inside my head. It would calm it. Now I would suffer on the other side of it, clearly. But I know it would bring me peace for a short term. I know it wouldn't. That seems to be the... That seems, you know, I go to a jail meeting every Tuesday night. And one of my favorite things about going into the jail is asking the guys, do you know what it takes to stay sober? I ask them, do you know what it takes to stay sober? And invariably they go, yeah, you bet, I know what it takes. And my second follow-up question is, why are you here? If you know so well what it meant and how to stay sober, then why are we back in jail again? I have had to admit that my plans are the very worst ones. You know, we were reading in my home group meeting the other day that, I love this. This is so funny. If a mere code of morals or philosophies were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, right? Well, guess what? I've got a code of morals. I've got a code of philosophies. And you know what the problem with them is? They're mine. And my code of morals and my philosophies don't measure up. And that's the problem. I can't ever satisfy my code of morals and my code of philosophies, because at heart I am a liar, I am a thief, and I am a cheat. I have six constant companions that go with me everywhere I go. Selfishness, self-seeking, self-serving, self-pity, self-centeredness, and my favorite, self-delusion. Okay? I had to look up the definition of delusion, and it blew me away. It says, a persistent belief in something false. Semicolon. Typical of some mental disorders. Now you know what you're working with. Okay? These are the things that go with me constantly. They go with me today, y'all. I have not been cured of those things. Those are the things that go with me today. That's why you'd think after 19 years that I shouldn't have to go to as many of these silly meetings as I have to. You'd think something would have changed. But I wake up with those guys every day. You know, I have my grand sponsor says that pride will not let pride be removed. And that's the chief source of my defects of character, is simply pride. I am full of it. And I had to look up the definition of pride because I didn't know what that one meant. Pride, an excessive belief in oneself. Okay, you got me on that one too. Okay, now, like I said, when I got to my first AA meeting, I had no idea what was wrong with me. I had no idea that I had a phenomenon of craving. I had a mental obsession and a physical allergy that once I poured alcohol into my system, kicked off a craving that made it impossible for me to stop. I had no idea. It's not like I went to school someplace where they taught me about this. You don't get, you know, you're not when you're a baby and you go in for your polio vaccine. They don't prick you and go, oh, this guy's going to suffer from the phenomenon of craving someday. And they didn't have that written on my medical report. I didn't know I had this thing. How could I have known? Because in all honesty, y'all, what can one drink hurt? What's wrong with taking a drink? Nothing. Unless you happen to have a physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession and a phenomenon of craving develops. And I think that's the thought process of just about everybody I've ever worked with. What can one drink hurt? Because I promise you guys, I don't make declarative statements before I drink. Like, tonight, I'm going to get drunk, and I'm going to crash my car into somebody else's. Doesn't that sound like a great plan? I mean, let's all rally around that one, guys. That's a good one. Or, tonight, I'm going to get drunk. I'm going to take a couple of drinks and I'm going to cash hot checks everywhere I can over town. Tonight I'm going to have a few drinks and have to visit the ATM three times after 2 a.m. Tonight I'm going to have a drink and have a wonderful relationship with Mrs. Wright now. Never once do I don't make statements like that. But you know what? When I start drinking, that's the way things end up. Because I've got a phenomenon of craving that develops. And it condemns me to drink until one of four things happen. Until I run out, until I pass out, until I black out, or until someone physically intervenes to keep me from drinking, a.k.a. the policeman likes to do that one a lot. Right? They like to intervene and abruptly stop me from enjoying myself. Okay? And I didn't know these things happened once I started to drink. I had no idea that was going on. Now, here's what's crazy. Despite 100 forms of proof, or therefore more, despite all the proof in the world that this is happening to me, I mean, I'm living it, okay? I'm living in the middle of this stuff going on 24/7. Every time I drink, this phenomenon is kicking in, and I'm drinking until I run out, pass out, blackout, or somebody shuts me down, okay? Despite this going on, guess who can't see it? Me. Because I'm living in a delusion. I'm living in a delusion. I can't see this is going on in me. I'm using everything. But you know, I love Dr. Bob's story in the Big Book. He talks about something that is just, I read it and I think, yeah, good idea, Bob. It's the beer experiment. Anybody ever read the beer experiment? Bob figures, hey, nobody gets drunk on beer. Well, yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you, Bob. Nobody does. You're right. And so what does he do? He buys enough to fill up his basement. It's not like I mean, since you don't get drunk on beer, you only need like three of them, right? But he buys enough for his whole basement. I'm with you, Bob. It's good, solid thinking. Okay? And then he starts to drink. And you know what his next wonderful thought is? Hey, man, when you're all smelled up on beer, you might as well fortify it with vodka. And then his next line is, and so ended the beer experiment. You know? And I'm with you, Bob. That's my kind of thinking. Do you know, I have countless attempts to prove that I can drink like a normal drinker. Countless. I have tried everything I can think of to drink like a normal drinker. Switching brands, staying away from those people, not hanging out with guys like Craig. You know? I mean, he's just bad. You know, if I just stop hanging out with Craig, I'd be all right. And by the way, thanks Craig and Billy for putting me up at Hotel Clove. It's the best off-the-strip hotel you can get. It's a really nice place. And, you know, I've got all these ideas to prove to you that somehow I'm gonna control and enjoy my drinking. You know what occurred to me at about 15 years sober one day? Normal people don't have to prove they can drink like normal drinkers. Did you ever stop and digest that one for a minute? They don't sit around and go, I'm going to prove to you how I can drink today. They just stop. I don't get it. I get the idea, you know, I have tried to control and enjoy my drinking. I've tried with all fiber of my being to control. And I found, like, you know, like Great Grandspons talks about, who happens to be the same guy that's getting the surgery done tomorrow, is I don't get the preposition and. I get the preposition or in that statement. I can control or enjoy my drinking. I can't control and enjoy it. Because I have tried to control my drinking. And you want to set up a recipe for misery? Start to time me. Okay? I used to date little Al-Anon girls that would say, that's one. Do you realize that the liver can only metabolize one shot in an hour? That's one. You've already had one. Your liver's going to be behind if you have that second one. Oh, shut up! God, leave me alone! And I promise you, if I'm going to enjoy my drinking, we're not going to have control in it anywhere. We're not going to control, because once I start, baby, there's no stopping. And God forbid if you get in between me and a drink when I need one. Because I will walk all over you, I will chew you up, and I will spit you out as fast as I can. Because I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, and I destroy lives. That's what I do. I tear people's lives apart in my pursuit of me feeling good. In my pursuit of me, I destroy other people. That's what I'm really good at. And by the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have to destroy lives like I used to. And I'm really, really grateful for that. You know, I didn't know these things were going on in my life. I had no idea. I'll tell you a little bit about my... I always try and imagine my drinking like this is put yourself in the position. This will be hard. You're going to have to work really hard to imagine this, but put yourself in the position of a non-alcoholic in front of a TV set. And they pop in a video that says Mike Erickson's life. Okay? And they stick the video in and the non-alcoholic starts pushing the play button. They would see my day start something like this. They would see me come to in the morning. And they would watch what Bill talks about in the first chapter of the Big Book in Bill's story, where he says, my brain raced uncontrollably in the morning. My brain races uncontrollably in the morning. I go through panic. I go through terror. I go through intense fear in the morning because I have to try and recreate things that have happened. I have to try and put pieces together because I black out some. And I brown out occasionally. And I'm just out most of the time. And I don't know what's going on. So I have to play strategic phone calls to people to try and figure out what the heck I did the night before. That's a strange deal it's really a tough question to ask. What did I do last night? Friends don't respond well to that. You know, and so I have to fish. I'm a fisherman. You know, we had a good time last night, didn't we? Well, yeah, you were the life of the party. And, you know, and finally you got to work your way up to what did we do? You know, because I don't know. And I go through panic. And here's what's crazy about me is I go through this morning phase for a couple of hours. Now, here's what's tricky about alcoholism to me. And if you don't want to be offended, please do not read this book because it is offensive. There are offensive words in here. It uses terms like full flight from reality. That's not a good statement about you guys in the audience, okay? Nor myself. It uses terms like outright mental defective. Is that making you feel a little better? It uses terms like peculiar mental twist. Uses terms like strange mental blank spots. You getting the idea here? I am convinced this book is telling me I'm retarded. And I don't mean that in a demeaning way. I really don't mean it in a demeaning way because if the lay person watching this video of me would see me go through this in the morning, they'd see me coming to on a hangover and they would have this conclusion. That guy got drunk last night and I'll bet he's feeling pretty bad. And he's probably not going to drink. And they would see, after about 3 hours of this pain and torment, they would see something incredible happen. And our book phrases it as two little words. Something happened. Okay? Something happens to me. I start to endure the peculiar mental twist, which is, it wasn't that bad. So I woke up with a couple of goats. Big deal. It happens. It's part of the drinking hazards. And I can take that scenario just like that and go, it wasn't that bad. So tonight, when I do it, here's what I'm going to do. And I launch a beer experiment. Tonight I'm going to go over here and I'm going to do it this way and I'm going to do it that way. I'm just going to get a 12-pack and sit at home. I'm just going to go have a couple beers with the guys. Because what can be wrong with that? What can really be wrong with it? Well, nothing. Unless you have a phenomenon of craving, the mental obsession. Okay? And I would go through that and they would see me go through the progression. Okay, now this is the first day you're watching this. You know, you're sitting there watching. It's the first day, no big deal. Maybe he's on spring break or something. You know? And I would go through and they would see me start to drink and I would go through the drink and I would get ugly drunk. And I would come home and I would usually end up my nights by just hanging over the toilet, just throwing my guts up, which is a lot of fun. If you haven't tried that in a while, give it a whirl. It's fun. And I would come, I would go through the progression and wake up the next morning. And that the person watching the TV would go, surely that's it. And I would repeat the same thing over again. And I can see that normal person watching, what is wrong with you, retard? Why do you keep going to the fridge? What is wrong with you? Oh man, if I had the answer to that, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? You know, and I've had, you know, that didn't go on for days. That went on for weeks. That went on for months. That went on at about 5 years into my drinking, I started to sense there wasn't something right with me. We have that. We kind of are intuitive that way. I mean, the book says we're above average intelligence. And so I figured something was going on. And so I was working at a water park, which is this another idea of how selfish and self-centered I am. I'm working at a water park. I'm sitting on the lifeguard chair taking care of your children. And I'm drinking vodka and Gatorade. Because my theory is, more good, solid alcoholic thinking, what the vodka takes out, the Gatorade puts back. It's equal. Okay, so that's what I'm thinking. And that's good. If you're an alcoholic, you understand that reasoning. And so I'm sitting up there and I'm taking care of your kids, and I might engage in some of those other powdery substances as well while I'm up there taking care of your kids. And so, you know, we had this group there that worked in an organization. They were on a mission trip from a group called Campus Crusade for Christ. Okay, and so I would come stumbling in at 6 o'clock in the morning from the night before, and I'm just plowed because I don't sleep a lot much anymore, and I'm coming in from the night before partying, and these guys take an interest in me. They sense that Mike is not walking hand in hand with Jesus. Okay? And they would start to quiz me. Okay? They would start to ask me questions, and they would say things like, "Mike, who do you think the most important man ever to walk on the earth was?" And I'd say something like, "Oh man, Ted Nugent, bro." You know, right on. And they'd say, "No, we think it was Jesus Christ." And I'd go, "Oh, man, every day, same answer. Why don't I get it? Why don't I get it? Why don't I get it? I'm not that dumb. I'm not that dumb. I should get it, you know?" And these guys had something going on in their life. You know what they had? They had something I hadn't seen in a long time, integrity. They had something I hadn't seen in a long time, was a relationship with God. And it showed through the lights of their eyes. And it showed through the actions they took. There's a line in Scripture that says you'll know them by the fruits they yield, right? And these guys were bearing fruit. And I think a sick soul sees that and has to do one of two things, be attracted to it or has to flee from it. And I was a sick soul, and I was attracted to that. And so I got involved with them. And I went to their book studies, and I got a sponsor, except they called it a disciple. And their book studies were Bible studies. And I tried with everything I had in me to do what those guys were asking me to do, except I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't stop drinking. They would say things like, "Mike, we don't think it's a good idea to drink." And I'd retort, "Oh, yeah? Well, Jesus drank wine on the cross, man." And they say, "Yes, Mike, you know, he might have had some wine on the cross, but we typically don't find him going to Enzo's bar on 6th Street and ordering 12 kamikazes at a time." And I was interested in these guys, and I wanted what they had. They were living clean. They weren't living guilt-ridden like I was. I could see that. I could see that clearly. And I just love this part of my story. I went to Daytona Beach with them one time on a bus from Austin to Daytona, just me and 80 of my closest Campus Crusade friends. And about the fifth verse of Kumbaya, I couldn't take it anymore. I got off at the first truck stop because by this time I have to drink. And I get off at the truck stop and I come down with the worst case of the flu you've ever seen, which only high potency NyQuil can cure. And I start to knock down NyQuil because I have to drink. I have to drink. And alcoholics are resourceful. I can read a label. I know when there's a little alcohol inside something, and I started knocking back NyQuil. And I drank that the whole trip. And felt, you know, and then being centered in those guys and just centered, surrounded with those guys and dying, just dying inside. And finally, my Campus Crusade for Christ sponsor one day pulled me aside and said, "I don't know what we're going to do with you. I think the only help we've got for you is if we hold you under the water till the bubbles quit coming up." And that guy did the best thing for me that any man could ever do. He fired me as a Christian. And you know what? You know what happened to me as a result of that is I walked away with this thought in my head. I have tried to do what God wants me to do, and God wants nothing to do with a guy like me. And that was the point at which I got set on a downward spiral that I could not recover from. That's what drove me to the point of hopelessness, unlike anything I've ever felt before. Those were dark times. I was drinking and drinking and drinking, and that's all I did was drink. I mean, that's it. I'd love to tell you some great sexy stories beyond that, but I just drank. I mean, I just drank, because what do you do when God isn't even an option anymore? There was no way out. And our book says how dark it is before the dawn. How dark it is before the dawn. Well, I'll tell you, I ended up at a treatment center as a direct result of a girl I was dating. And I had failed to show up where I was supposed to show up yet again. And she called. She was sitting home watching, and an ad for a treatment center came on. And she called and made an appointment for me the next morning. What a sweet girl. And so she picks me up and drives me to the front door of a treatment center and says, go in and talk to the guy. And I said, okay. I know the quickest way to shut anybody up is to agree with them. It is a great battle tactic today. It works really well. My sponsor tells me, you don't want to get in a fight, take your gloves off and get out of the ring. Okay. All right, I know that. So anyway, I go in there and I talk to this counselor, and he says, I'm going to give you a little test. And I'm thinking, hey, I'm in college. I can take a test. He says, there's 44 questions. I do the math real quick, 68, D plus, I'm out of here. And I don't shoot for A's anymore, you know, just enough to get by. A 50-yard runner and a 100-yard race kind of thing. And so he gives me this test, and I start answering these questions. Do you ever drink alone? Well, yeah, I'm in college. Who doesn't? Do you ever feel like you have to hide your alcohol? Well, I got roommates. Yeah, I have to hide my alcohol, wouldn't you? So, do you ever feel like you have to be the leader of the crowd? Like, if you saw the losers I hung out with, I am leadership material. And they need a leader. Yeah, I feel like I have to lead them. And so I'm answering, and I don't know what possessed me to answer that honestly that day, as honestly as I could, but I had 28 circled yes answers on that questionnaire by the time I was done. I'm doing the math. Okay, it looks pretty good. Counselor comes back in, says, let me tell you how we score this. You answer yes to 0, 1, you may have a problem drinking. You answer yes to 1 or 2, you may be an alcoholic. You answer yes to 2 or 3 or more, you're probably full-blown alcoholic. And I'm looking at 28 circled yes answers, trying to figure out what my category is. And the guy says, do you want to check in? And I give my pat in response, no, it's not that bad. And now I've got yet one more reason. Now I got professionals telling me that I'm a problem. And so I set out that weekend to get as drunk as I could, and no matter how much I drank, my body would get drunk, but my mind stayed physically clear. And the only thought that reigned in my mind was, it's over, man. The gig's up. You're done. You're done. You're either going to have to kill yourself or you're going to have to get some help, because you're done. And I would love to tell you that at that point I checked into the local AA meeting, that I got a sponsor, that I read the big book and worked the steps, and we said the Lord's Prayer, and there have been lambs and bunnies jumping through my meadow ever since. But you know what I did is I worked the Mike Erickson program of Alcoholics Anonymous for a year and a half, and I guarantee you, you won't see a book back there that says, As Mike Sees It. It is not a conference-approved program. Because that's what Katie talked about sitting in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous dying. And I sat in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for a year and a half with no sponsor, with no direction other than my own, with no foundation in the big book, with no foundation in the steps, and most importantly, no foundation in God. And at a year and a half sober, I'm walking past a mirror and I'm thinking, I look at myself and go, if this is all there is to sobriety, I'm going to drink or I'm going to stick a gun in my throat. Because my life sucks. And if you've understood that, there's hope. You've understood what it's like to sit in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and think there's got to be something better than this. There's hope. Because here's what happened to me is for some reason, I guess I had just enough good training. I went back to one more meeting. And I think what happened to me that night is I went back with a different head and maybe a different heart. I was sitting in a meeting, and this old-timer I was sharing on this four step I had done as a result, as one of my requirements to get out of treatment. And this guy pulled me aside and said, "Mike, I like everything you say except for what comes out of your mouth." Right? And that might sound cruel to you, but that guy saved my life that night. He's the first guy that ever had enough courage and conviction to stand in my face and say, "I'm concerned about you, buddy. I don't want to see you die out there." And that was his, it just came out in a strange form, you know. But that's what he said. And he said, "I want you over at my house every Monday night at 8 o'clock until I tell you it's okay to not be at my house on Monday night at 8 o'clock. And the best words that I've said ever since I've come into these rooms came out that night, and they were simply, okay. What I knew for sure that day is that I cannot have sobriety on my own terms. I cannot have what you have to offer on my terms, but I could have it on yours." And what that man did for me is he walked me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as they're outlined in the big book. We sat down, we talked about what he did was he convinced me, beyond a shadow of a doubt, what I suffered from. He was the first one to sit down and talk to me about what it meant to be alcoholic. And he understood. He understood. He gave of himself. This is something I couldn't understand. This guy gave his time, hours, to sit down with me and talk to me about our doctor's opinion. And talk to me about Bill's story. And talk to me about There Is a Solution. And talk to me about more about alcoholism. And talk to me about We Agnostics. And the process of sitting down through him, with him, going through that book, you know what it did? It made me desperate. I didn't arrive desperate. I became desperate after I understood the nature of the malady I suffered from. And when I became desperate, I could do whatever you asked me to do. I became desperate as a result of sitting down, reading that book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and finally getting a clear understanding of what was wrong with me. And I thank God that guy had 7 years. If there's anybody in here that has over 20 years of sobriety, I thank you for staying in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, because you were here when I got here. And I'm so grateful that somebody cared enough to stay, that somebody actually came to Alcoholics Anonymous and got less self-centered rather than more self-centered. I'm so glad he came to give rather than to get what he wanted out of it. He came to give. He was at the meeting because he wanted to help. He had received the gift and read what it said in the book, that the only way I keep the gift is by giving it away. Thank God that man was there that night. He saved my life. I hope and pray that that's what I carry into meetings. I hope and pray. I hope and pray that I'm not too self-centered to sit there with my little clicks and not notice the new guy that comes in. And not be able to reach my hand out and sit down with a guy and spend. You know what our book talks about? It talks about the need to spend hours, if need be, talking to these new guys. Hours. You know what that takes away from? What I want. It takes away from my time. A little quick story. I used to play a lot of golf. I used to play golf every Saturday and Sunday. And one day I'm on the tee box. I can remember it, on the 12th tee box. I'm a member of a country club. And I'm playing. And I'm thinking, as I was driving, I didn't feel comfortable going to the golf course because I hadn't worked with a new guy in a long time. And I'm sitting on the 12th tee of the tee box, and I play with four other guys that are non-alcoholic, and they don't know anything about me, and I start crying on the tee box in front of these guys. I mean, now this is tough guy city. And I start weeping, and I don't know what the heck is wrong with me. And I go home and I call my sponsor because I don't know what to do. And I call him and I say, "Dave, I'm dying inside. I haven't worked with a new guy forever. And I think it's because all I do is play golf and all I do is think about me." And he goes, "Well, you hit the nail on that one. You hit the nail on the head that one, genius." Right? And he says, and I said, "Dave, I think I need to quit playing golf for a while." And he said, "I think that's probably a good idea." And so I went home and I canceled my country club membership. And that was, for me, like, I'm a self-centered guy, you know. That was a tough deal. You know, the next week I'm working with two brand new guys. The next Saturday I'm sitting down with two brand new guys reading the book, and my spirit is renewed and I'm full. Because, you know what, every once in a while I get in my prayer and meditation in the morning and I have these Joycean epiphanies. Those are big spiritual light bulbs going off. And you know what's, you know what? Please stay here and get active and get involved, and please do the work, and please walk the walk. Because in my prayer and meditation one morning, I have this simple thought. I'm reading in the book. It says that our purpose now is to be at a place where we can be of maximum service to God and to our fellows. Guess who is not the beneficiary of that statement? Me. I'm the only one that's not a beneficiary of that statement. And it came to me that if I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober, I missed the boat. I have missed the boat entirely. If it's about me getting sober and that's where it ends, I have missed it. Because I'm supposed to be in a place where I can be of maximum service to God and to my fellows. And what I had that my epiphany that morning was that sobriety is simply the icing on the cake. That's the benefit that comes along with being of maximum service to God and to my fellows. Isn't that great? Just blew me away. Just stinking blew me away. It's not about me. It's not about me. I'm amazed. I'm amazed that a guy like me can even have a thought like that, because I live in a completely self-centered, like an AMC pacer, like a little globe with self-centeredness in it. You ever seen those big bubble domes on the AMC pacer? That's what my world's like. That guy walked me through the rest of the steps. We walked through and we did 6 and 7 and we did 8 and we did I did a thorough fifth step with him. I told him the truth. He said, he sat me down on the fifth step and said, "We can have a long day or we can have a short day. It's up to you. You can keep and we can talk and talk and talk until you get out the ones that are killing you. I'm here all day." And so I laid out my deepest, darkest secret that I swore I'd never tell anybody that morning. And, as is typically the case, he went, "Okay, whatever. Yeah, okay. Here's what we do about that." And he was good, too, in the fifth step. He gave me instructions and gave me some directions on things I could do to battle, to really, Craig and I were having a conversation on 6 and 7 on the way over here. I find it interesting that there's like that much text in the big book on 6 and 7. Here's my other epiphany in the recent years. 6 and 7, I hear a lot of wordy, windy discussion on it, and I came to this conclusion, which is, you know what? I'm going to ask God to take away my defects of character, and then I'm going to have to act like he has. Wow. I'm just going to have to act. That's my part in the deal. It's not big, wordy, theological discussion. My job is to act. If stealing is a problem, sooner or later, I got to stop stealing. I can sit and pray all I want about it, but if I'm not willing to take any action, it's useless. He took me through the amend step, and I got to tell you guys about something that's absolutely amazing to me. I told you God plays tricks on me and has a sense of humor with me, and I just love him for that. My wife and I, the whole family was going to Disney World back over 4th of July. And there's been one guy on my amends list that I have not been able to find in 19 years. And it's not for lack of trying. I've tried to hunt him down, and I've not been able to find him. It was the guy that sponsored me in Campus Crusade for Christ. And because what happened with that guy is I dumped my fist step on that guy. So in the front row, I went, "Wow." I'm like, "Yeah, wow. All right." So I dumped my fist up out to a guy that had never had premarital sex, to a guy that had never had a drink in his life, that was a Christian from age 11. And I dump all this. I'm sitting in the student union at University of Texas dumping all this stuff out on him, watching him go, "Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. Oh, God." Looking for him to look for the mark of the beast on the back of my head or something. And then, I left that guy with a "Thanks, I feel better now." And he's like, he had to go get exercised or anointed or something like that afterwards. But see, you know what the problem is? Is I left that guy with an absolutely awful impression of what Alcoholics Anonymous is. Awful. And I have been trying to make up that damage for a long time. And 19 years, I have been consistently praying. So anyway, I'm on this. For some reason, we tried to book our flights using air miles and stuff, and we couldn't all get on the same flight. So the kids went one route. I ended up getting booked to go to Orlando from Dallas, Texas. I had to go through LaGuardia, New York. It's a bit out of the way, but okay, I'm cheap. I want a free ticket. So that's the way I'm going. Anyway, I get on, take the first leg, I get on the second leg. I'm sitting on the plane, and, you know, I get on early, and I get settled in my seat, and everybody else starts funneling down. And I'm looking at the people coming down, and this giant, stinking giant comes walking down. I'm thinking, oh, anybody next to me but the giant. God, please, not the giant. Please, please, not the giant. Sure enough, the giant slides right in next to me. I'm thinking, oh, man. And so we get to talking, and I lean over and I say, what are you doing here? And he says, well, I'm coming home. I'm an art director. And I'm thinking, okay, good. This is a short conversation. I'm not going to talk to some art director. And I said, oh, okay, really? Who do you work for? He says, Campus Crusade for Christ. And I go, huh. I said, do you happen to know a guy named James? He says, no, I don't. You know what the guy did? I told him the story of why I needed to get in touch with James. You know what he did? He prayed. He stopped right there. And he said, Lord, I want you to intervene in this. I want you to help Mike find James so we can clear this up. I was blown away by that. I was blown on an airplane. It's like, don't you know there are people watching us, giant? He stopped and he prayed. But he taught me a lesson. Boy, did that guy teach me a lesson. The guy taught me a lesson that, you know what, it's okay to go to God. It's okay to go to God anytime, anytime. And so here's what happens is I go to Florida, I come back, and I have an email waiting in my inbox when I get home. And it's got James' address. So I call the number that he's given me, and it turns out I get an answering machine. And I say, this is Mike, I'm looking for James. We went to college together. A week later, I get a phone call. Oh, God. And it's from James. Okay, now this gets better. James is a missionary in the Ukraine. And it just so happens that he's in the United States these 2 weeks on his fundraising trip. Now, you want to talk about God's orchestration and God's timing and why we persist no matter what the consequences are? Because God says God does what he says he's going to do. I believe it in my heart of hearts. Why would he take care of a guy like me, like that? Must be because he loves me. Must be because he wants me to do something for him. I don't know. I don't know. But I'm blown away by that. After 19 years, you know, it's funny. So I make the amend to this guy. I say, is there anything I can do to set the record straight? And he goes, well, I am on a fundraising trip. <You know? laughs> Okay, I get it. And you know what? Thank God I'm in a position to be able to support him financially. I'm just amazed that that's the way my life is, you know? I'm amazed. There are so many things that have happened to me as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm watching my little home group just go through a genesis. We're just almost like we're all being reborn with a renewed, invigorated enthusiasm for our big book and really with a spirit of, I just want to help you. I want to help you get sober. I want you guys to experience peace. I want you to experience freedom. I want you to experience usefulness. I want you to experience that stuff. Because it's good. It's good. And I want you to be able to live like that. And we are having remarkable success down in that jail. Watching guys just, you know, and because our whole attitude has changed from, we're not going to beat sobriety into it. We're going to freely offer what we've got. If you want it, come take it. And we'll help you get that. We will help you. I'll go to the ends of the earth with you if you want to stay sober. But if you don't, please, don't waste my time. Because there are guys that want it out there, you know? I mean, there are some guys out there that really want it more than anything else. And that's all I want to do. I just want to help. And you know what? And that's not saying we exclude everybody. If someone's an addict or something like that, I want to get you where you need to go. I want to get you shuffled into a place. You know, I do this with guys that aren't alcoholic or addict. I pick them up on Sunday, take them to church. I can be of maximum service to God and my fellows. They don't all have to be alcoholic. I'm amazed by that. I'm amazed by that. I'm truly blessed, truly, truly blessed to sit here amongst you as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't believe it. Like I said, you know, my life's not all lambs and bunnies today. I don't live happy, joyous, and free all the time. I struggle sometimes. I struggle in Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes, but I haven't had to drink. And the bulk of the time I live happy, joyous, and free. But you know what? With each trial comes a little more growth. With each trial, I grow a little bit closer to the God I believe in. You know, with each trial, I get a little bit better at what I do and the plan God's given me. So, you know what? My hope and prayer for the specific group tonight is, man, if I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and got sober and got this precious gift and failed to give it away, I would be more selfish than the day I got here. And my prayer is that you guys will get active. I know a lot of you are active in here, but I know there's probably some out there too that are just struggling. And my prayer is that you'll get in, get a sponsor, get active, work those steps, and then freely give what you've been given. Thanks for having me tonight.